From the newsrooms of WBUR and GBH, I'm Simon Rios. Welcome to Boston, where a recent protest by white supremacists shocked staff at Brigham and Women's Hospital. GBH's Philip Martin has been covering this and joins us now to talk about it. Hey, Phil, great to connect with you here.
Simon, same here, my friend.
So I happened to catch you on Rachel Maddow's show the other night. Props to you on that. Talking about this group of Nazis that went around Boston riding the T and handing out flyers about white genocide. What do we know about these people?
Well, they call themselves the Nationalist Social Club, or NSC 131. The 131 is this alphanumeric code for anti-communist action. These guys were started by a fellow out of Worcester in 2019. He started the group after being kicked out of the base, another neo-Nazi group. He was kicked out for theft.
Lovely.
Yeah, decided to start another white supremacist organization, specifically a neo-Nazi group. They have branches in Vermont and New Hampshire, Maine, Massachusetts, and say they have branches in France and Germany. The Anti-Defamation League believes they do. So too, the southern part of the Law Center. And they're trying to make a name for themselves, Simone.
Okay. And my understanding is that they were targeting two doctors at Brigham and Women's for a recent position they had taken on equity in medicine. What exactly is the issue here?
Well, it was a chance to glob onto something Donald Trump had talked about weeks ago when he said that white people are being discriminated against in healthcare. And the neo-Nazis showed up trying to echo that message. Whether there's a direct connection, I'm not sure, but the message was similar. No more than 2 weeks after the president, former president rather, made the comment, the neo-Nazis showed up at the hospital Brigham. And they said that the hospital is basically involved in an initiative that they call anti-white. But what it actually is, it's an initiative to prioritize patients in cardiac medicine. For years, and this was discovered in 2015, Black and Latinx patients would come into the hospital. And for serious cardiac problems, they were treated in general medicine, many of them. Not all of them, but many of them, compared to the number of white patients who were seen in cardiac care. And the outcome makes all the difference in the world. If you're in general, as opposed to cardiac medicine, you have a less of a chance to recover properly.
So this isn't about prioritizing white people or people of color. It's really about creating parity along race lines. And Phil, you actually talked to one of the professors, one of the doctors who was targeted in this action. What did she have to say?
Well, that's right. I talked to two professors who were targeted on a leaflet, on a flyer that these neo-Nazis were passing out, with the heading, "We will not tolerate the genocide of the people who founded the city." And Dr. Michelle Morse is one of the doctors targeted. And she's a professor at Harvard Medical School and director of New York City's health department. And here's what she had to say, Simone.
What I'm trying to do is hold the medical industrial complex accountable for the harms that it's caused to communities of color and push for racial justice and health equity in partnership with the many communities that I serve.
Right. So even liberal Massachusetts isn't free of neo-Nazis.
No, not at all. In fact, the Southern Poverty Law Center and the Anti-Defamation League and groups that study extremism have noted there's been an uptick in neo-Nazi organizations across the country. Massachusetts actually has several, including this NSC group and the group called The Base.
Yeah, I'll say, Phil, I've seen these kind of white supremacists protesting in this area for a long time. They come out, usually less than a dozen. I think you reported that there were two dozen in this case. But this goes well back before Donald Trump's presidency. Is there anything different these days? What's different about the situation now as opposed to 10 years ago?
I think the difference is that they're finding messaging out there that resonates with their messaging. Things that years ago would have been considered fringe are now being mainstreamed. So you have these white supremacists protesting in front of Brigham and Women's Hospital, saying that what's happening there is anti-white. Well, if you go online, you see that that message has been echoed by what we might call ordinary people who say that, yeah, this is anti-white, that's anti-white. It's medicine they point to. It's also curriculums they point to. It's American history they point to. And it is giving white supremacists, like these neo-Nazis, it's giving them energy. And basically, it's a loopback. And these messages are helping them to grow. So, Simone, here's what Robert Trustin, the director of the Anti-Defamation League of New England, had to say about this.
They've drawn more racists and white supremacists and anti-Semites into their ranks. And we know this because their most recent demonstration in front of Brigham and Women's Hospital actually drew more people than we've seen at previous protests that they've organized.
Well, the First Amendment being what it is, these people have a right to protest and say anything they want. What, if anything, is to be done about this?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question, Simone. The First Amendment for many of us is sacrosanct. And so, yes, they have every right to protest. And if they want to protest in front of Brigham and Women's Hospital, they have that right as well. What concerns these doctors and others is that some people aren't just protesting. Many of these doctors have received death threats. Morris has received death threats. Her colleagues who work in equity medicine, anti-racism efforts in medicine have received death threats and harassment online. And so that's the real concern. I actually spoke to the FBI this week about this issue. And they, of course, said, unless something happens, unless these folks are engaged in some type of action that's provable, there's really nothing they can do. That this is indeed a First Amendment issue at this point. It becomes something less than that, of course, if these people are receiving actual death threats, which they are. But proving who sent these death threats, that's a different matter altogether.
Well, Phil, thanks so much for this important reporting. It's great to see you getting your stories across nationally as well as locally. That's Philip Martin, investigative reporter for GBH. Thanks again, Phil, for keeping us up to date on this disturbing issue.
Thank you, Simone. Much appreciated.
Before we go, I should tell you what else is going on. A big portion of the $9.5 billion in COVID recovery money set aside for highway and infrastructure projects in the state will be going towards fixing old bridges. Rick Domino is with the transit advocacy organization A Better City.
Massachusetts will be getting the fifth highest amount of bridge money in the country. So that obviously is clear that our bridges need work and the federal government's realizing.
Domino says he's pleased to see that bridges across the state will be getting attention, not just the ones around larger cities and towns. And the state's environmental chief says all of Massachusetts' 25,000 culverts need to be replaced as well. Secretary of Energy and Environmental Affairs Katie Theoharides says this will benefit wildlife and people.
If a culvert blows out, usually a road blows out with it, and that means people can't get to critical services, they can't go see family members, and they can't get out of harm's way.
Theoharides says untreated water and sewage overflows, especially in the Merrimack River, are another problem that must be fixed. The infrastructure money will be spread out over the next 5 years. On the health desk, the Red Cross of Massachusetts is trying to get more people of color to donate blood. It's part of an effort to help the 100,000 Americans living with sickle cell disease, a blood disorder that primarily impacts people of African or Caribbean ancestry. Jeff Hall is a spokesman for the Red Cross.
There are markers in the blood that we can see and type, and they can be prioritized to help make treatment for people with sickle cell disease.
The Red Cross is working with the NAACP on the initiative. And finally, the 2022 Winter Olympic Games kick off tonight in Beijing. and the town of Medway will have a stake in the games. 20-year-old Zach DiGregorio is competing in the men's double luge. He secured his Olympic dreams a month ago when he and his partner came in first at the qualifying event in Latvia.
I'm just focused on putting down the two cleanest runs I can for the doubles competition, and then for team relay, helping the team and putting down a great run there as well.
The luge competition is one of the three fastest sports in the Olympic Games. The athletes ride down an icy track on their back, feet first, at speeds up to 90 miles an hour. Watch Wednesday as DiGregorio and his partner race for the gold in Beijing. So, how do people get into luge racing in the first place? I've always wondered that. From the newsrooms of WBUR and GBH, Boston's dynamic duo of public broadcasting, I'm Simon Rios. Que tengan un buen fin de semana. Hey there. A lot of people listen to Consider This at the end of the day, and NPR is up first in the morning. But a lot of the actual news happens in the middle of the day, and the team bringing the best information about that news as it happens is the team behind WBUR and NPR's show Here and Now. And of course, there's a podcast version. So want more of the top news reporting from public radio around the country? Check out Here and Now. Find it in the same place you found this podcast, wherever you listen. Just search Here and Now.